Well, dear friends, it's indeed another honor and privilege to have each of you here with us to share these next couple of days in fellowship and study of the Lord's Word, and to enjoy together the fruits of the knowledge of the studies that everyone has prepared and our brethren have prepared for us, both those who will be speaking to us and those leading the study, and each one of you who have taken the time to consider the questions in advance, we just thank you for that and look forward to all the blessings of this weekend. You know, I'm going to read a quote that I think all of you are familiar with. It's entitled, Jehovah Our God. And it starts out with the psalmist's words on Psalm 145:9. The Lord is good to all, and his tender mercies are over all his works. This sweeping statement takes in the utmost bounds of the material universe, and also the humblest, as well as the most exalted sentient being. The whole creation is his care. Jehovah our God, the great emperor of the whole universe, and his wisdom, power, goodness, and benevolence are abundantly equal to all the responsibilities of so exalted an office. The human mind staggers in its efforts to comprehend the mental resources of a being who is able to assume and to bear such responsibility. Think for a moment of the memory that never fails, of the judgment that never errs, of the wisdom that plans for eternity without the possibility of failure, and that times that plan with unerring precision for the ages to come, of the power and skill which can harness even every opposing element, animate or inanimate, and make them all work together for the accomplishment of his grand designs, of the tireless vigilance that never ceases, nor seeks relief from the pressing cares of universal dominion, whose eye never sleeps, whose ear is ever open, and who is ever cognizant of all the necessities and active in all the interests of his broad domain. And that's the end of the quote. You can find that in reprint 1560. So as we consider the plan of God, we see how manifest these characteristics that describe this great being, the creator of the universe, how it reveals our great and mighty creator, and the privilege we have to have an insight into that plan, his wondrous plan of ages, strengthens our faith and love for him. The plan really begins with the first verse of Genesis. There, the opening statement is a simple one. God created the heavens and the earth. But then immediately the book talks about the preparation of life for man. Preparation of earth, that it may sustain that human life, that intelligent life. Here we are informed that man was created in his likeness with a free moral agency to choose between good and evil. It is evident, therefore, it would be contrary to his plan and purpose to make man a mere robot that would always do good. Such a being could not choose to love him, could not choose to obey his righteous law, and would not be in God's own image. Instead, he wishes his intelligent creation to be willing servants, willing to choose and love righteousness, and willing to love their creator, who is the epitome of love and righteousness. Nor could or would God ever interfere with man's ability to choose. nor would he ever exercise his providence in a manner detrimental to the ultimate ends of his own plan. Therefore, it was necessary to allow sin to enter the world, and death the consequence of sin, along with the consequences of the fallen nature. And so for over 6,000 years, sin and death has reigned, and man is learning the exceeding and dire results of a sinful course. Since we are directly told that his tender mercies, his kind and loving providences, are over all his works, and that all his wise purposes shall be accomplished, we are interested in that great and sublime design of his arrangements. You know, we see that the wisdom of God permitted the earth to remain in complete state, and instead he prepared a place in Eden for the first pair, a place of total perfection, a foretaste of the blessing that will be the inheritance of mankind in the fullness of times for the willing and obedient. The first pair were permitted to dwell there until the test of obedience was applied, and there they brought on themselves and their posterity God's judgment. They were then sent out into an incomplete and imperfect environment. God's wisdom dictated that these conditions would be the best arrangement for their experience and for the trial of the human family. Man was forced to eat bread by the sweat of his brow, but this struggle hindered man from a quick deterioration into mental and moral depravity, as well as delayed the trouble prophesied for the end of the age. Meanwhile, the preparation of earth continues in parallel, waiting for man's restitution to the standard of the perfect mental and moral likeness of God that was lost in Eden. Since the fall, a majority of the race has forgotten God, as we read in Romans 1:28. And even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a reprobate mind to do those things which are not convenient. They have continued to follow their own misguided course, exercising their own misguided will, which, if left unchecked, would lead to the complete and utter annihilation of the human family. But the memory that never fails has not forgotten them. Still, our loving God has, unbeknownst to the majority, been preparing and has already partially executed his plan for their redemption and restitution, which will be to all people. As we read in 1 Timothy 2:4, he would have all men to be saved and to come unto the knowledge of the truth. So even though sin has entered the world and death by sin, not one member of the human family will be forgotten. For God has promised that all who are in their graves will hear his voice and come again from the land of the enemy death. So while the vast majority of race lies in sin, still God has another purpose. From this race he has selected a few who have sought after him, if haply they might find him. These who exercise faith in his promises, the creator of the universe was pleased to reveal something of his plans and purposes. What a grand privilege is ours. Meanwhile, the world presses on willfully, seeking and acting in accord with its own selfishness, which in the course of time is bringing about the great time of trouble that is now resulting in the complete overthrow of all human governments and institutions. And not only that, but will wipe away the refuge of lies. They've been allowed to try every type and nuance of government, only for it to ultimately end in complete and utter failure. And all this because they turned their back on God. The wisdom of God that plans for eternity without the possibility of failure and sees the end from the beginning, has carefully arranged that this day of trouble should come on man in God's own due time. He that times that plan with unerring precision has so guided the affairs of men as not to allow this trouble to come any sooner nor any later than when it will do the most good, preparing their hearts for his tender mercies. For he desires to bless, but love and wisdom says he must wait until the human heart is ready for the bestowing of the good things he has in reservation for them. We believe we are living in that due time. We are witnesses of the fulfillment of these end time prophecies that has established the fact of the Lord's presence and the fact that we are living in the day when Christ is establishing his kingdom. For we are told in 1 Corinthians 15 that he must reign until he has put all enemies under his feet. And the last enemy to be destroyed will be Adamic death. The first enemies that he must remove, we are told, begins at the house of God, for judgment begins there. He must remove all the government institutions, all the false organizations, in order to free man for their individual judgment and trial. When God's judgments are in the earth, we are told the inhabitants of the world will learn righteousness. The fact of his judgments being in the earth and the evidence of these judgments against the nations is proof of his presence. We have proof of the fulfillment of Daniel's vision, for example, and the end of the Gentile time prophecies. We have seen the collapse of the kingdoms of this world, the breaking apart of the church-state condition, and the reestablishment of the nation of Israel in their promised land. We are witnesses to the fulfilling of Elijah's vision on Mount Horeb, which is another proof of the winds of, which is another proof, beginning with the winds of war, which were prominent between 1914 and 1945, removing the old order. The earthquake of revolution, socialism, and communism, leading to the fires of anarchy, which are being ignited by terrorism, corruption, and financial collapse. And we think the worst is still yet to come. In Luke 21st chapter, after speaking about the Gentile times, we read, starting with verse 25 through 28, "And there shall be signs in the sun and in the moon, and in the stars and upon the earth, distress of nations, with perplexity, the sea and the waves roaring, men's hearts failing them for fear and for looking after those things which are coming on the earth, for the powers of heaven shall be shaken. And then shall they see the Son of Man coming in a cloud with power and great glory. And when these things begin to come to pass, then look up and lift up your heads, for your redemption, deliverance, draweth nigh." God is permitting the avarice of man to bring about the great conflict. The great battle has begun and will continue until everything can be shaken is shaken out, and the manifestation of Christ's kingdom will be the only thing that remains. God's power and skill, which can harness every opposing element, animate or inanimate, and make them all work together for the accomplishment of his grand designs, is at work through the instrumentality of his Son, and the result will be glorious. The tireless vigilance that never ceases and is ever cognizant of all the necessities and active in all the interests of his broad domains is working out his good pleasure. Ephesians 1:9, "Having made known unto us the mystery of his will, according to his good pleasure, which he hath purposed in himself." Now we'd like to read a compilation of two texts, Ezekiel 12, 22 and 23, and Habakkuk 2, 3. It'll go something like this. "Son of man, what is the proverb that ye have in the land of Israel, saying, the days are prolonged, and every vision faileth. Thus saith the Lord God, I will make this proverb to cease, and they shall no more use it as a proverb in Israel. But say unto them, for still the vision awaits its appointed fixed time. It hastens to the end. It will not lie. If it seems slow, wait for it. It will surely come. It will not delay. The days are at hand, and the effect of every vision. We are on the precipice, brethren, of the kingdom of righteousness. And the events that we see going on in the earth reveal to us that we are in this very end time, beginning of the restitution times. And so we end with the words of our text again. The Lord is good to all, and his tender mercies are over all his works. May our faith be strengthened as we study these matters and realize that he is watching over and is interested in every aspect of our lives, but not only ours only, but for all the world. He is carefully orchestrating their circumstances and conditions so that when the end of the millennial age comes, the earth will be complete, both physically and socially, organizationally, and personally. And may the Lord bless the convention and our studies together. And again, we're glad so many of you are here.